Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome, everybody. Chuck Bonnywell and Julie Hayden here at the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, Truth Straight Up.
Brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. All kinds of stuff to talk about today. We'll get into the fact that the fraudsters, the coosters, Eli Bremmer and Trader Todd have conceded defeat. Good news on that.
And the greatest football victory in college history from the 19th century on. We'll talk about that a little bit later from my alma mater.
That's right. But first, I want to start off with Kate Anderson, an attorney with Alliance Defending Freedom. They have been helping a Jefferson County family who was horrified to find out that their middle school child was going on school trips and that the school district had a policy that I'll let Kate explain that's just appalling. And in the meantime, they filed for a preliminary injunction to stop this from happening on current field trips in the meantime. So first, Kate, thank you. Appreciate
you coming on and all you and your organization.
Thanks for having me.
So I'll just let you.
Thank you.
Why don't you explain the case and what it is you filed and then what is the most recent action you guys have taken?
Yes, well, you gave a pretty perfect summary. This is a case against the Jefferson County School District over their overnight policy. They room students based on gender identity rather than sex, without giving that information to parents or students ahead of time, and without allowing students and parents to select a sex-separated option. This came to pass last year on both an overnight trip to D.C. and Philadelphia, in which our primary plaintiff, the Wales, their fifth-grade daughter was placed in the same bed as a fifth-grade boy and ended up having to advocate on the trip to be able to be roomed in a room with just other girl students. And so when they got back from that trip, they asked the school district about how that had happened and learned that it was policy and that it would happen again, potentially even as soon as when their younger twins go on the same trip this year. They connected with another family who had a very similar situation during Outdoor Lab, which is a district-wide program for sixth grade students. It's part of their core curriculum for the science program. And they go on this camping trip for 4 days. And this last year, another family, the Rollers, their son was placed in a cabin where his chaperone for the week was a female student who identified as non-binary, but she was placed in with sixth grade boys to monitor them when they slept, when they changed clothes, and even to monitor their showers to ensure that they took short enough showers. So both of those families were joined by another family who has a child set to go on the Outdoor Lab, as well as children that are in sports. All of these families have upcoming trips for their kids this coming year. And so they're asking for this policy to be, in the full case, we're asking for the policy to be changed so that parents have the information and can select a sex-separated option. So that choice is really there for all parents to choose what's going to be best for their kid in that situation. And then the pending motion that you mentioned, we filed right away asking the court just to ensure that while the case is going forward, the seven kids that are part of this lawsuit are not required to stay in a room in overnight accommodation with a student of the opposite sex while the case continues.
I mean, this is just complete insanity. I mean, from what I understand, I mean, the Jeffco School Board, it's like the parents are outraged. The school board, why they didn't just change the policy.
Because they believe in the policy.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, our son is in eighth grade. And he went on the sixth grade trip. And I have to tell you, and other people mm-hmm. who maybe don't know about this, it is traumatic is too strong a word, but for a lot of kids, Arson included, that was the first time he'd spent any length of time away from parents or family, right? And it was a very kind of, he loved it. It was wonderful, but it was very kind
of... particular part of being away from the family.
Yeah, right? Really. But it was a challenging thing. And I can just, it breaks my heart for this poor girl, given everything else is going on when you're in middle school, to suddenly being stuck in bed with a boy and the school district making her and the family feel like they're the bad people. I mean, it is just so outrageous, Kate. It's beyond belief, frankly. And I mean, I'm assuming that's sort of the reaction you guys have heard too.
Yeah, and it's a policy that's not good for any student, no matter how they identify, because instead of having adults deal with these issues ahead of a trip, they're making the kids deal with them in real time when they are on a trip. Often, like you said, the first trip they've been away from their parents, and with outdoor lab, they have no access to phones or ability to call home. And so we're asking them to give the information for parents, and parents may come out differently on how they feel about this particular issue and rooming of their kids. But let those parents and those kids make that decision before a trip with all of the available information.
I mean, that's not asking much, right? You're not actually, as I understand it, you're not saying, which I think they should do, is just ban this as a stupid idea altogether, right? But in the meantime, you're just saying if the parents and the students want to opt out of this and make sure that if you're a girl, you're assigned to a room with other girls, That's all you're asking, right? That just seems totally reasonable to me. I have no idea why this, what is the school district response? Why do they not want to agree to let parents?
Because they hate parents. Yeah. They hate civilization. They hate you. It's not hard to figure it out.
That's a good point.
It's Rev indicated that he wasn't clear if he could choose how attractive a girl he could think was if he identified with. Well, it might be okay, and I'm willing to be flexible as long as, you know, Yavonda was the one, but not some of the others.
No.
Well, that'd have been my reaction, I guess. But it's just pathetic. It is pathetic, and it shows you how sick the left is. And I guess the only thing you can say is, well, you went to a public school. You didn't go to a charter school or a private school. Because why would you want to go to a school system that imposes that on your children?
Well, and the shifting of the decision-making authority from parents to the government is a problem we're seeing across the country with all kinds of policies and things going on in the public schools. Parents are in the best position to know what's going to be the best thing for their kid. They know their kid much longer than any teacher who's going to come in and out of their lives. And so really being able to make sure that that authority is with parents where it belongs to be able to make decisions in their kid's best interest is so important right now.
Well, generally speaking, your parents can screw up any decision for their own kids, with the exception that non-parents make much more worse choices. If you want to have a bad decision, ask for people who are not related to each other to make the decision.
You're making it based on policies without and politics and an agenda without any consideration for the kids. I think back, you know, and our son has another next week. In fact, he's going on the eighth grade outdoor ed trip. My daughter years ago went on the outdoor lab trip in Jefferson County. And they were great experiences. And, you know, it's like, why are they messing with it? Right.
Why are they?
Because I think if you were a parent, your only option at this point, if you weren't sure what was going to happen and your kid was concerned, was to not let them go. And that's just so unfair that the kids would miss out on what should be a great educational and social kind of opportunity, don't you think?
Yeah, and it would be so easy for Jefferson County to do this in a way that ensures that all parents have the information and they can make decisions and that every kid going is able to be comfortable.
Exactly.
As I vaguely recall a previous conversation, you were kind of going to get together with the school and explain the problems, and they were supposed to be to give up to reason. And I must admit at the time, I went, they're not going to. Let me tell you, they're not going to.
Yes.
did that happen?
Yes, we did try to discuss it with Jefferson County ahead of filing the case. We were not able to get confirmation that they would ensure that these clients' students would be roomed based on their sex rather than their gender identity. And so we did have to file the case. The case is just early on, so we haven't gotten a formal response from Jefferson County yet, but we should in about a week or two.
How broad, Kate, would this, like, let's say you win, cross our fingers, right? And you know, let's say you win, would this apply to broader than just Jefferson County, other schools in Colorado, or would it just apply to the, or could the court decide on how they wanted to apply, but to just this particular situation?
Yeah, this is very much up to the court and how broadly the court writes the injunction that we're asking for. Initially, just while the case is continued, this very early motion is centered on making sure that the students that are part of the case aren't roomed with a student of the opposite sex while the case is continuing. But in the ultimate case, we're asking for the court to weigh in on the constitutionality of this kind of policy of forcing kids into this situation and hiding the information from parents, the impact that has on the students' bodily privacy rights, the parents' parental rights, and religious freedom for both. And so it depends much on how broadly the court writes the decision in the ultimate case, but certainly it can have broad application outside of Jefferson County and beyond.
But as a practical matter, a district court cannot bind other district courts. It takes an appellate decision to do that. They may find it the reasoning logical, and so other courts would adopt it, but a district court cannot bind all the other district courts. Of course, these days the rules don't apply, so who the hell cares? But I mean, it would take an appellate decision to make it truly binding on other district courts.
Yes, other courts will look to the decisions of district courts when they're facing a similar problem. It certainly sends a warning to other school districts that they need to give parents this information. Otherwise, they could be sued and be facing this situation. But it also wouldn't surprise me with a case like this if it does go up to an appellate court that has a bit broader decision.
You know, one of the things that's just interesting, again, is a parent, because our son is trying out for basketball, and they're like
on the girls team.
There are 8 million forms that we have to fill out. I mean, all kinds of, we had to go to a parental basketball meeting and the coaches were there and everybody could ask questions, et cetera, et cetera. And it just seems to me that school districts, now we have a great school, so I'm not against it, but they kind of pick and choose how they want to involve parents, right? It's like, if it's something that benefits them, if you're a parent, you got to jump through all kinds of hoops and answer all kinds of questions. But if they want to do something sneaky and they don't want you to know, that they don't have a problem doing that. It just seems they pick and choose when they want to involve parents and when they want to exclude parents. Have you guys found that?
Yeah, and that's why we're pushing for a broad understanding of parental rights to make decisions like this for kids. You're seeing schools that ask permission to prescribe a Tylenol, will socially transition a child without telling their parents. In another state, but you see these kinds of things where it is very uneven and unequal how they're deciding when to involve parents and when not to them to involve them. But parents do have a constitutional right to direct their kids' education and upbringing. And so we talk to parents and teachers all the time that just want to partner together. But some of these policies from these school districts is making that really difficult.
The problem with Republicans is we never quite get, or at least conservatives, or whatever you want to call it, quite get the war that is done on language. And if you accede to the language, you lost part of the war. And I have to say, when you say socially transition, that sounds wonderful. Who doesn't want to socially transition a kid who's growing up? What you mean is potentially sexually mutilate children. It's not, they don't socially transition. They're trying to get them into a sex they were not born with, which I think we have to come up with another better phrase than socially transition.
Well, she has to be a lawyer.
Unfortunately, it's the phrase that a lot of the physicians are using and the counselors at this point. But it certainly does, as you say, put kids on a pathway to surgical and medical intervention that is just lifelong consequences of that. Very, very dangerous, very important that we're pushing back on that.
And let me switch gears here a little bit and talk about another case that we clarified that you were on. This is a victory, right? Well, this one, we're hoping you get a win here. So you guys represented, I think it was a graphic designer, right? I think it was the 303 case, and it was a free speech issue. You won in court, but even probably more, well, not more importantly, but very important, you also won, what, almost $2 million?
Define 303,
Julie. Well, I'm going to let her do that. In legal fees. So why don't you tell us about the case, and then this most recent decision on that.
Tell us what 303 is, even though Julie won't tell us.
Well, it's the name of the company.
Okay.
Yeah, so 303 Creative is a small business in the Denver area. She provides website design to all clients, but she can't create all messages, which is something that we've seen with creative businesses like that, businesses that do their work in speech. And we've seen a number of cases like this come about around the country. She had to file a lawsuit prevent Colorado from coming after her the way they had a cake artist in Colorado, Jack Phillips, that you may be familiar with, because she couldn't create custom websites to celebrate same-sex marriage, even though she wanted to create wedding websites for people. And even though Colorado admitted that she served all people, people in the LGBT community, that she just couldn't create certain messages, no matter who asked for them, they tried to compel her speech. And the case went all the way up to the Supreme Court, where we got a wonderful victory from the court that protects speakers of all kinds on all issues, to say that speakers, even when they sell their speech, like a business, like a website designer or a speechwriter, that they can decline messages that would violate their conscience, no matter who asks for them. And so this is a really important speech case that protects a lot of people, and certainly costs a lot of money for us to litigate all the way to the Supreme Court. And so we are in the process of resolving that attorney fee issue, as you say. And I think those are some early reports that are coming out, but certainly a good result there.
Well, how much were the attorney's fees you're asking for?
I don't know what the final number was that we were asking for, but I know it's in the millions.
In the millions.
Like that cost. That case like that costs in the millions. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, those cases do. Well, that's good.
Well, which really emphasizes how a single parent or have no chance to spend, very few people have millions to spend to litigate a case to the end. And without great folks like yourselves, they would never get up there. So, I mean, it's an example of the enormous benefit that your firm does, and it takes contributions, I believe.
Well, yeah. So we'll toss you an easy one here then, Kate. Where can people, as Chuck said, not often do you get legal fees awarded. And I mean, you do, they argue about it for years and you'll all be dead.
Sure.
Or somebody sends you a check. So where if people want to help, as Chuck says, the great work that you do, where can they find out more?
People can find out more about our work and support our work at adflegal.org. You'll find information about our cases, our issues, up-to-date details on what's going on, but certainly welcome the support. We're able to provide our services at no cost to our clients. And just as you said, these are the kinds of cases that cost a lot and people can't individually pay them to vindicate their civil rights. And so that's why organizations like ours exist. And I'm grateful every day that I get to do this work.
Well, I bet. You know, it's hard to be, part of the thing and when you're practicing law is that, quite frankly, you can't just pick the cases you think you agree with. If you're going to make a living from it, you got to take all kinds of cases. So it must be a great feeling to just be cases that you really want to do and really make a difference. So that must be incredibly enlightening and fun for you.
It's a huge blessing.
All right. Hey, Kate, thank you for your time. Kate Anderson with the Alliance Defending Freedom. Thank you for the work that you do and good luck on getting that injunction.
When is it set for? Is it
thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Bye, Kate. I think that it hasn't been set yet, at least according to the press release they sent. We had a ton of comments. Let me read some of the comments and then we can get to some of the other stuff. This is from Sandra. Totally agree with you, Julie. Jefferson County has gone to hell and everything. From Dr. Donna, as if life is not confusing enough with children, then to add such events to their lives. From Sandra, it's all the DEI BS. Let's see. You missed it. No, that was Kate Anderson. For those of you who joined late, with the Alliance Defending Freedom. She's okay. Thank you. Sandra is answering that too. So I want to talk about another legal case.
Well, I want to talk about that one for a minute more.
Sure.
I mean, it shows you what rot is in our public education system. It's really hard to believe. I mean, who would have believed that you'd have cases like this 10 years ago?
Right.
And you know, all the people kind of go, oh, you know, the pendulum goes back and forth. Well, the pendulum goes back and forth because you fight for it. It doesn't just happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, this victory that they come up with, the legal fees in the other case, they may not get legal fees. I don't know. Normally, you don't get legal fees. I'm sure the costs run into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. But it's a case you really want to follow, and I'm sure we will follow it and give
right.
you whatever the court decides. You have to, I didn't ask her in federal or state court. I assume it's federal court.
Yeah, I think so.
Because you have no chance in Colorado.
You know, you could just see Jefferson County appealing it, right? The Jefferson County School Board saying, oh, no, we do not want parents. I mean, what's the problem with having parents have a say, right?
Yeah.
And you can just see them appealing it all the way as far as they can. Because, again, like you said, they know they have the money to fight it.
Yeah.
And these parents don't. Right. I mean, I guarantee you the kids will be like married with children of their own before the whole thing probably gets resolved. But it is one of those
Jardines versus Jardines. It's a famous case in Dickinson novel that it go on and on and on through generations. And you think, well, that can't happen today. It does happen today. It happened in the 19th century in England, and it happens today. In fact, Jack Phillips, in some sense, is still going through the same thing.
Keep refiling.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, other good news on the Colorado Republican Civil War front. Trader Todd and Eli Bremer have admitted defeat. They lost in court. They were talking about appealing. They were talking about pursuing. They have conceded defeat, and they have agreed to drop their disgraceful lawsuit.
With prejudice. The key is the phrase.
What that means.
With prejudice means you can never bring it again. You've said that the issues decided here are final, at least final between the parties. It's not final between people who are not part of the lawsuit, but between the parties. So it's an enormous win.
For Dave Williams and the real leadership of the Colorado Republican Party.
And all those grassroots that fought so hard. And what is fun about it, I mean, all of us who looked at the case said, how can we lose? I mean, Todd and Eli Bremer and
Nancy Pelosi,
as well as Chris Murray. You know, I said, how do we lose this case? This is such a slam dunk. But, you know, if you read in the papers, if you read anywhere else, it looked like, oh, my God, the courts wouldn't.
The Anschutz Media Industrial Complex.
And so this is just a tremendous victory.
And guess what? You haven't read it anywhere, have you? This is
the only place.
No one, they did all of this stuff about, oh, Dave Williams is ousted. Oh, Dave Williams this, Dave Williams that. Eli Bremer is, you know, putting in Wikipedia. He's the head of the Republican Party. Not play losers. They were forced to agree to drop the case because it was so incredibly stupid. They were losing big time. There was no way they were going to win. So they agreed to drop it, like you said, and never bring it up again. And you don't see anything.
In law, a court of law. But in the court of media, I'm sure they go, oh, no, that wasn't it.
They disappeared from social media. So it's interesting. So that's gone. So in case you hear people saying, oh, well, we're fighting. They're not fighting. They conceded an enormous defeat, agreed to drop the case, challenging that Dave was the legitimate chair of the party.
Not challenging, but suing him, saying you violated the contract by pretending you were the head of the party.
When we're the real head of the party. Well, they're not the real head of the party. Now, it's interesting because this is a decision that the judge signed the order late Friday. So it's this kind of breaking
news. Did he sign it?
I think so. I think the motion I saw, the judge, Eric Bentley, signed it. What I hope that Dave and those guys do is try to, and you tell me, can they try to get to the bottom of this in terms of, so while Eli was running around pretending to be chair of the Republican Party, I want to know, one, what kind of money did he raise? And if he did raise any money, then he better give that back to the real Colorado Republican Party. Number two, did he sign any contracts? I mean, he went to Washington.
He signed a contract with Chris Murray.
That's right. Right. So, you know, so if you're, yeah. So should the Colorado Republican Party, the real one, have to pay Chris Murray? I hope not. I mean, I think that, and I don't, what can Dave and those guys legally, when a case has been dropped, can they try to find out what kind of, if any, shenanigans Eli and those guys were conducting?
Well, I'm sure about the voluntarily request. And if they can't get any answers, they can sue them. Just like, you know, say, hey, you have to give us the bank accounts you have to give us that you took in the name of the party. And right. What's your agreement?
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming
party?
You're right. Eli wasn't just sitting there with the money in a, you know, envelope.
Yeah.
Maybe, but.
I mean, these were six-figure lawsuits. So they paid Eli Bremer a lot of money. Not
Chris
Eli
Murray.
Bremer, Chris Murray a lot of money. So it's going to be interesting. And now they're going to ask our side, the good side, just like Alliance is defending freedom, ask for attorney's fees. I doubt if they'll get them, but they'll certainly get costs, which can, you know, in this case, run tens of thousands of dollars.
So hopefully. Well, and from Sandra, and this is a real point too here, Sandra, not only that, Watkins, Bremer, and all wasted money and time with their BS lawsuit. Oh, exactly. I mean, that's what I imagine. So if you're the real Republican Party under Dave, Anna, and Hope, can you try to sue them now for damages, for instance, it hurt fundraising, that kind of thing?
No.
Or no? Okay.
No.
I wish they could, though. But you know, here's the thing. So that's to see, now that they've dropped their lawsuit and they're forced to concede, okay, no, Eli Bremer is not the chair of the Republican Party. Dave Williams is the chair of the Republican Party. I'm just going to bet, Chuck, that they just jump on the bandwagon and unify.
Yeah, they're unifying as we speak, going out with Dave, knocking on doors, making sure there's money to the Republican candidates throughout the state, and they're working really hard down in peak Republican territory.
Yeah, Eli Bremer has personally changed the Wikipedia page back. Now, Charlene asks, why not damages?
Sure part of the thing is they agree not to. Well, I think, I don't know what the final one is. I'm sure they probably agree that the Republican Party may not just, they don't want to just go in another litigation. So I'm sure there are limitations because of the stipulation.
Well, and you said damages are also hard to get, right?
Well, attorney's fees are it has to be frivolous. Vexatious, I think, is another word in the statute. And it's hard to make that standard when you have a Harvard lawyer like Chris Murray.
So, but you're saying it's a kind of thing that in real life sounds good to talk about, but in real life, you don't generally get damages after something like that.
Look at
Donald Trump, right? He can't get.
Well, you have to understand they never filed an answer. There was a complaint, not an answer. And they could have asked for damages, probably required to ask damages. And I never got around to that.
But in the meantime, though, as promised too, so Rhino Watch, and this is annoying, a lot of rhinos put out a list of the people who attended or voted for the fake Republican Party or did not support the vote in the real Republican Party.
So Rhino Watch has come up with just an incredible document. It's got a great document.
Listen, we'll be talking about this
for years to come.
But this includes other people, not just those who attended the meeting
by proxy,
because those you kind of keep in mind were only people who were actual voting members of the state central committee.
Right.
But there were a ton of other rhinos who went ahead and supported it. Right? I mean, we're talking about people like Christy Burton Brown,
she was at the meeting.
Who was at the meeting? We're talking about Britta Horn, who decided to get herself elected there. Wayne Williams, former Secretary of State, who was going to be the parliamentarian. Chris Murray, all kinds of people. Lou Webb.
All your traitors.
Right. So this is a list of the total traitor list. Not to mention, and I think it's important, I know the election is coming up and we want to get Republicans elected, but I'm just going to read the list of the Republican congressional candidates who came out and said that Dave needs to resign, that they support Eli Bremer. I hope those people are calling Dave Williams and apologizing to him and saying and unifying, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we're talking about Jeff Crank in CD5, Jeff Hurd in CD3, Vladimir Archuleta in CD1, Marshall Dawson in CD2, John Fabricatori in CD6, Gabe Evans in CD8. And I'm just going to say Lauren Boebert was a wishy-washy. She did it. But yes, those other people openly came out again. So, you know, they're believing their own media. And we've talked about it and we can kind of move on now. But it's like The grassroots, and I mean, need to stay active, guys, because you know that now they've lost the lawsuit. Now they've been totally humiliated. They're not going to give up and say, oh, well, I guess grassroots are in control now. I suspect that what they're doing now is going to try to take over the party and the elections for party leadership positions from PCPs on up in 2025. So you have to stay active, because otherwise you're going to have KBB running the party again or something.
Well, they'll have somebody who they'll have to find some. Now they have to find, they have to check this list.
Yeah.
See if their candidate has been identified, and then, oh, no, I wasn't on there.
Yeah, I mean, it's important that people know, I believe, that grassroots people know who the RINOs are, because there are a lot of people who like to say, oh, I'm grassroots. Oh, I'm grassroots. Mike Johnson, for instance, in Congress, and are not. And so it's just, it's good to know, particularly when you look at some of the county leadership, right? So.
Oh, yeah, really much. Because a lot of in the metro area, all the county leaders got together and decided to screw over all their constituents, including all the people in their executive committees, who all, you know, gave them censure resolutions, in some cases tried to remove them from office. It really is an amazing process where the Republican Party has, you know, 40% of its people are really Democrats for all intents and purposes. They're Republicans who really like Democrats and want to be like Democrats. It's just that it's hard because the Democrats don't want them.
It's also, I think, and this is why I encourage, I mean, we've gotten involved and everybody to get involved, because the people who get involved, for the most part, not for the most part, but a lot of the people who get involved, they get involved so they have access to power and money. That's why. Because I got to admit, the Adams County Republican meetings, once a month, are not generally, they're not like, you know, a Taylor Swift rock concert. Let's just put it that way.
It used to be attended by 60 to 80 people.
Yeah.
Until the RINOs, anti-RINOs took over.
But most Republicans, many of us are just out there living our lives and doing stuff, right? And so you have to be aware that the people who get themselves into positions of power sometimes are doing it because they care and they want to make a difference and they have everybody's interest at heart. Sometimes they're doing it only to either aggrandize themselves or somehow line their pocketbook, right? And so those people are more motivated to seek office than I think some of the more ideological ones. So it's just, it's something to keep in mind. If you're like, oh, I don't have time to be a PCP, or I don't have time to do that, keep in mind that the establishment people who want to make money off of it, they're finding the time. So I think we have to too.
I agree.
Okay. What do we got? Let's see. From Dr. Donna, and KBB wanted to know why I did not support the school ballot issues as she was part of it with Advanced Colorado. I was not surprised by the list for Laramie. I was surprised by the list seen for Larimer, not in Weld. Learned of a new, quote, crime. Someone entered my fenced yard last night to turn my water on, and it ran all night. No cameras, can hardly wait for the water bill. Oh, wow, Dr. Donna, I'm sorry about that. Maybe, you know, call the police. That'd be my advice. Call the police and maybe you can get them to knock that down a little bit, as it was fraud. Now, do you want to talk about your most favorite thing, Vanderbilt?
My favorite thing.
Oh, not your favorite thing. The most important thing in the news cycle today.
The news cycle today. Okay. I went to Vanderbilt University, which is a liberal arts, I hate to use that word, down in Nashville, Tennessee, sometimes called the Harvard of the South, although you don't want to be the Harvard of anything these days. But its football team is sort of a joke. It's finished last in the SEC, I don't know how many years in a row. It seldom wins a single SEC game. People often go, how did Vanderbilt get in the SEC against Alabama and Mississippi and Tennessee? That is because Vanderbilt used to be the king of the South. It had, from 1906 to 1922, six national championship teams, often undefeated, an incredible powerhouse.
This is 1906, though, right?
1922. But most schools don't have six national championships in their entire school thing. I mean, six national championships in a period of, you know, 18 years. I mean, they were the dominant force in all of college football in the South and a top team in the country after World War II, not so much. I went to Vanderbilt, and in 1969, my sophomore year, we beat Bear Bryant and Alabama in Nashville, it was a huge victory and so forth, but quite frankly, Vanderbilt had some pretty talented people, someone on the NFL like Pat Toomey. Asher is offensive lineman. And Vanderbilt and Alabama wasn't a great year for them. In fact, they lost to Colorado in the Liberty Bowl. But over the next 55 years, from then to the day, Vanderbilt has won one game, and they played every year. It's won one game in 55 years.
Against Alabama.
Against Alabama. Against anybody.
Yeah, that'd be Iowa State, right? No.
They won one game in 1984. That's it, one game. So it comes in this time. I told you in 1969, Alabama wasn't that great. Now, Alabama's the number one school, was the number one school in the entire country. Number one. And the week before, they played Georgia, the number two or three team, and beat them in an exciting one. So this was truly Alabama's going, God, this will be great. We'll go to Vanderbilt. Nick Saban, the former coach, said there's only one place in which it's not difficult to win, and that's Vanderbilt. And he did not mean it as meanly as it could have been mean because they suck. He meant it because, and he said he meant it because most of the fans are for Alabama, which you might find a little strange, but I can kind of explain it to you.
This is Chuck's monologue on Vanderbilt. Okay.
It's because all the Alabama fans come up, and a lot of Alabama fans in Tennessee, and Nashville's a party city. You can have lots of fun. So over generations, they come up and party in downtown Nashville and in the Grand Ole Opry and everywhere else in town. And quite frankly, as a student, it's the most exciting game because there's so much energy behind the game, even though all against Vanderbilt. It was a very energetic game, and occasionally they were close games. So this year, it was incredible. And Vanderbilt upset Alabama 40-35. And it was called one of the greatest upsets in college football ever, ever. And they may, you know, it could be another 55 years before they win another one. So the few fans that were, and Alabama always wears crimson red, and Vanderbilt wears black. And if you saw a picture of the stadium, all red except the student section, which is, you know, partially, which is black and some empty seats. And one of the things you do, people go and they buy the entire season ticket for Vanderbilt. Every game in the years that Vanderbilt is entertaining Alabama in Nashville. Why? Because it is literally cheaper to go to that one game, throw all the other tickets, just throw them on the ground and so forth, than to buy a good seat on game day in that game. It's, you know, you save a lot of money by buying all the other tickets and just throwing them away, or maybe giving them away to your favorite charity or something. And a lot of that is done. So it was a raucous 40-35.
With the video?
Yes.
Okay, Thomas, so we're going to play the video out of order. So then that what they did is that Chuck said, hey, grab the, and this is kind of cute.
Remember, Vanderbilt is very much like an Ivy League school. So we do not have fun fans. They're not raucous. They're not tearing the, you know, they did well. But this game was an exception.
They tore down the goalposts, threw it in the river. And we have a video of somebody on Twitter. There's a cute, if you look at it, apparently it was like 3 miles. It took them an hour to
go downtown.
Go from the football field to where the river is. Well, and you'll notice the thing, they have a cute little goalpost icon. Thomas, if we could please play this is the Radiant student body taking the goalpost down and then carrying it and throwing it into the river for no clear reason. But if we could please play
plenty of clear reasons.
The Vanderbilt.
So the Cumberland River goes down into Alabama so they can celebrate it.
And you're seeing kids tearing down the goalpost here. If you look there, if you're watching on Zoom, there's a little goalpost. They're tracking it from the stadium to the
downtown
river.
Downtown Nashville.
Yeah, that's cute. That's a long way for students to keep that up, right? These kids are carrying the goalposts. Perhaps they're like, oh, well.
There's a goalpost. You can see them up there.
Right. Perhaps they're just like, all right, we're just going to let them do this.
The cops are out there. They're carrying the goalposts.
Yeah. I mean, that's an organized. This is what fireworks are supposed to be like. Nobody's trashing anything.
Oh, not burning anything.
Just except for the goalpost.
Goalpost, that one.
Oh, you can see now the little goalpost icon is at the river.
Yeah.
The river. There you go. And later, it did not, apparently it did not go to Alabama because we saw pictures of the fire department
retrieving it.
So
but that doesn't get any better for a Vanderbilt fan ever. I mean, you're talking ever.
Can we switch talk? Okay.
No, we can't switch talk. So the SEC now has a rule, being in a bureaucratic jerks, that if you rush the field, because it's dangerous, you get $100,000 fine for the first offense. $100,000. Second, $250,000. Third, $500,000. Well, the odds on that Vanderbilt will get to the $250,000 are about zero. The chances of it going tearing down its goalposts again anytime in decades and decades is about zero. But it was a great day for the Commodores, also known as the Doors, named after the band. No, they're named after the Commodore Vanderbilt, who founded the university. And it was just great. So now they go to Kentucky. They've been playing Kentucky since the 19th century, end of the 19th century, although the unlikely massive favor for Alabama, Kentucky and Alabama, but Vanderbilt and Kentucky are about 50-50. But it'll be, and then when they lose to Kentucky, everybody will forget. It will never be brought again. And they play Texas, the number one ranked team, in a couple of weeks. So.
We've got another fun video it's different. It's back to politics, a little bit different. There's another hurricane about to hit.
Oh, another. They have hurricanes all the time. How many times has Vanderbilt beat Alabama? Never. Hurricanes, God, there are tons of them. There's another one this week, next week, after the week.
It's kind of fun. So FEMA, as you know, there's been a kerfuffle, and that's putting it mildly. I mean, Elon Musk is sending stuff. President Trump has been down there. Yeah, Joe Biden went down briefly, and so nobody could get any supplies or actually rescue missions down because they had to close everything. But the federal government, the White House was saying, and Mayorkas was saying, well, we don't have any more money. FEMA's out of money.
You got to appropriate more.
Right. And there's been a lot of talk about, well, they spent it on illegal immigrants. Well, the White House, because again, lies, truth, it's all, fluid, right? So Corinne, KJP, was saying that recently, she's like, the FEMA does not spend any money on illegal immigrants. Well, people cleverly, and I think Dan Bongino had this, found videotape of her from a year ago or 2 years ago talking about how FEMA spends all kinds of money on illegal immigrants. So Thomas, if we could please play the FEMA soundbite.
It's just categorically false. No, Biden did not take FEMA relief money to use on migrants. So FEMA regional administrators have been meeting with city officials on site to coordinate available federal support from FEMA and other federal agencies. Funding is also available through FEMA's emergency food and shelter program to eligible local governments and non-for-profit organizations upon request to support humanitarian relief for migrants.
It's categorically,
a lie.
Care, right? It's categorically not true that we've spent money from FEMA on illegal immigrants. And then you find out today that they spent, $4 billion on COVID relief. That was in September, just last month. It's like, what kind of COVID relief did we need in September? So FEMA spent $4 billion on COVID relief. And here's that means, $4 billion. Now, the $4 billion, at least that's from FEMA records, right? Now, maybe though, the $4 billion, it's not going for COVID relief. It's going to all of these NGOs and pharmaceutical companies.
The Chuck and Julie NGO we're setting up now. You can send us money for anything, climate change, COVID, whatever you like.
It's just the money laundering operation there, right? So they have plenty of money. I think, all the speculation, that conspiracy theory that, well, these are red states. They want to do everything they can to make it difficult to vote for Trump. I think that's right. I mean, I think the Biden administration is, even though he and Kamala Harris, Biden sort of screwed Kamala by saying, oh, she's been part of every major decision
I've made. He's screwing her badly. Yeah. I left it all up to her.
Jill is writing his speeches for him, and the Kamala people are like, oh.
We did nothing. Mm-hmm. He did nothing. We did nothing. Blame Susan Rice or something.
Yeah. It's all Kamala's fault. So that's pretty funny. One other thing I wanted to talk about, and you noticed this, The Denver Post, here again, the left is just, every time you think maybe there's some rhyme or reason to what they do, just don't even think that anymore. The Denver Post has a great editorial out basically saying how we need to protect college students from sleeping with their professors. You read it, right?
Yeah, not just their professors. Anybody, they prohibit a professor if he's teaching the student or has some, you know, it's an assistant aide. You can't have any, you know, hierarchical be above the person you want to have sex with. You have to have somebody below you want to have sex with. Otherwise, you can sue who's ever above you. But they don't want those, you know, pesky graduate students getting together with a professor. No, we've got a new Puritan regime.
With everything that's going on in the world today, the Denver Post editorial by the editorial staff says the weak CU policy is failing to protect students from, quote, unwanted sexual advantages and consensual sexual
those
relationships
consensual
with CU staff. Now, this is the same Denver Post that has no trouble with drag queen library stories. They have no trouble with any of that, you know,
porn sites,
any of that kind of stuff.
But that's all okay. That consenting and you know, love the one you're with, unless they're at the same university.
I mean, it's yeah, like from Sandra, don't they have enough to worry about? BS.
No, good they reason. Don't.
It's just insanity. They don't. And the thing is they're so tone deaf. It's like, you know, KJP saying,
Jean-Pierre
saying, you know, oh no, we never ever said that. Here's a Denver Post. They don't even see how there is some kind of weird dichotomy. It's okay. And we totally support people sexualizing and sexually preying
they
on
would,
children.
They would support.
We're
fully,
all about sex
fully
trafficking.
Support the Jefferson County
right.
School Board.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
They would, and sex trafficking, illegal immigrants,
oh, great
sex
stuff.
Trafficking children, that's all fine. But if you have, like you said, a grad student who wants to sleep consensual with some CU staffer, we need to protect them against
because,
that.
Because unlike in prior times, the students, the grad students, they don't know how to say no. They just go, oh, well, okay, if you ask, I'll do it. That's basically the thing. Oh, no, you're...
They want to prevent it. They want they need to protect them from consensual
yeah,
sexual relationships.
Yeah, that's right. Thank God we got the Denver Post to prevent you from having consensual sex when you're an adult. Yeah. They got to stop that.
If you're a professor and you wanted to have sex with the kindergartners, have a drag queen show,
oh,
that's okay.
That's
we don't want to protect the children.
No,
we don't want to protect them at all. We just need to protect grown adult men and women.
Yes, yes.
Because, I mean, it's just like, and again, they don't even see it. It's like, who would have thought that? They had to have had a meeting. And somebody said, what are some of the pressing issues?
They don't have editorial.
But there's no one to have a meeting for.
Right. Cool. They have Megan Schrader. Okay,
this was AI. You know what I mean?
Yeah, AI.
AI wrote that whole thing. That's just the ridiculousness of it. And you know, briefly, we just have a couple of minutes left. Things, as you said, seem to be going well for Trump.
Everything's going well for Trump, except the polls aren't moving. I mean, okay, last weekend, here's Trump in Kentucky for 50 or 100,000 people. He has Elon Musk. He's got everybody in the world supporting him. So what did Kamala Harris do last week? What did Tom Walz do last weekend? What did Joe Biden do last weekend? I couldn't really find out.
I think Kamala went on a porn show.
Oh, that's right. That's
star
right. Yeah, yeah.
Or something like that.
Wanted to diddle with daddy or something.
Yeah.
And
I'm out of it. I didn't even know that such a thing existed, but yeah, it's like
it's a porn site for females. It is.
Okay. Well, apparently
not a porn site,
she's getting backlash.
Discussion.
But because
discussion.
People were like, "Look, if I wanted to watch Kamala Harris, I would like turn on CNN." They were like, "I'm turning on to you again. Know your niche. Know your audience, right?" It's kind of like so she's facing backlash. But that's what Kamala Harris did.
All weekend.
No, I don't know. I think they did other stuff too. But it is looking good for Trump. I don't buy the polls so much anymore.
Well, there's some you do.
Some, yeah. Well, we'll see. As you said, it's tight. So
It's tight.
Okay, well, that is going to wrap it up for us on this Monday.
We'll be giving out Vanderbilt hats on Wednesday.
Vanderbilt hat, and you can get merch.
Vanderbilt merch.
Thank you to Kate Anderson, everybody on Zoom, all the great guys at BBS. We'll see you Wednesday.
Take care.